Support for the Marketplace Money podcast provided by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, providing the financial expertise that helps both our members and our communities thrive. Let's thrive on the web at thrivent.com.
Hi, I'm Tess Vigeland, and today on the show, we're going to give you lots of travel tips like this one.
You save $200 to $300 a day on a hotel.
That's Gordon Shea with this week's Marketplace Money Inside Quote. Gordon's hit upon a great way to cut costs on what can be a traveler's biggest expense.
You save $200 to $300 a day on a hotel.
So what's Gordon's secret? Is it A, booking travel packages through websites like Expedia? Or is he B, the world's foremost collector of frequent flyer miles? More and more travelers find it easier to spend their miles on hotels instead of flights. Or does Gordon C, house swap? When he goes to a foreign city, he stays in a local's home for free. But they also get to stay in his for free. The answer is coming up on a special travel edition of Marketplace Money from American Public Media. From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, this is Marketplace Money. Over the river and through the woods. Are you back from grandmother's house yet? I assume you didn't take a sleigh. No, your trips were probably a tad more involved and expensive. This week we're talking travel. I'm Tess Vigeland. This is Marketplace Money, the Thanksgiving edition from American Public Media.
Marketplace Money is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, working to provide tools and expertise to help you meet your retirement goals and ultimately thrive in retirement. Let's thrive on the web at thrivent.com/retirement.
Chances are most of you aren't thinking about going anywhere right now, maybe because you're still stuffed to the gills with turkey or tofurkey. But more and more of us are heading out for the holidays, as in out of the country. Travelocity reports that Thanksgiving travel to the Caribbean and Mexico is up about 20% on the site this year. Trips to Western Europe are up 10%. If you're sitting on the couch right now because you think you can't afford to go anywhere, Marketplace's Stephen Hoffman has some advice on how to see the world on a budget.
While surfing the web, my wife found an incredibly cheap flight from Los Angeles to Buenos Aires. That's the good news. The bad news? I don't know why she was looking in the first place. We're pretty broke. So we had to make a difficult decision. Stay or go.
Once again, we need all electronic devices turned off and put away before we can leave the gate.
We used airline and credit card bonus miles to get an inexpensive fare. But what happens if you don't have miles to use? How do you vacation cheaply? Tom Meyer from Eurocheap.com says plan your arrival when most tourists are heading home. They even have a name for it.
Shoulder season is the period in between the high season and the low season. There are fewer tourists, there's better availability in the hotels. You know, if you go to Paris in August, for instance, this is the peak season for tourists, but there are no French people around. But if you headed south, if you went to Rio, for instance, it's winter there, but you can still go to the beaches.
Even though it was shoulder season in Argentina, we still needed to watch our spending. Yeah, the dollar has been taking a pounding recently, but one U.S. dollar equaled about 3 Argentine pesos. So in a sense, we tripled our savings. In fact, travel expert Pauline Fromer recommends that before you decide where you go, look for the places that will extend the life of your cash.
It's very important to think about where the dollar is strongest, because you're going to be able to buy a heck of a lot more if you go to a country where the dollar is strong. For the most part, that's most of Asia, except for Japan and Korea, South and Central America, and in many parts of the Caribbean as well.
This skyline right here wasn't here a year ago.
That's Christina Wiseman. She runs a tour guide service called BA Local in Argentina. While some travel experts don't necessarily recommend using a tour guide, she arranged a lot of things that really helped our budget. An apartment to stay in instead of a hotel, and a cell phone rental instead of making upgrades to our own plan. A good guide can help you avoid costly and boring tourist traps.
We're in the Recoleta Cemetery in the neighborhood Recoleta in Buenos Aires. There are 70 national monuments inside the cemetery, and most of the presidents are buried here as well.
Eva Perón, is she buried here?
Eva Perón is here as well.
So we got a little history lesson for nothing. The cemetery visit, it was free. But there are those times when even the most frugal person will have to part with their green.
She's Starlet.
If you need to do a little buying, check out stores that participate in a program called Tax-Free Shopping. Again, Pauline Frommer.
Unlike in the United States, where taxes are added at the cash register, in many countries the tax is included in the price of the goods, but foreigners, those who are visiting the country and staying usually less than 6 months, aren't required to pay that tax.
And I didn't pay any taxes. All I did was look for the stores that participated in the program. I kept my receipts and filled out a short form. Turns out that I spent over $50 in taxes, but it was back on my credit card in a matter of days. And where's that money going? Our next vacation. I'm Stephen Hoffman for Marketplace Money.
Marketplace Money is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, working to provide tools and expertise to help you meet your retirement goals and ultimately thrive in retirement. Let's thrive on the web at thrivent.com/retirement and by FINRA Investor Education Foundation, helping inform today's investor through innovative grant making and educational funding online at finrafoundation.org. The Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk is supported by the Kauffman Foundation of Kansas City, the foundation of entrepreneurship, online at kauffman.org.
How'd you like to go to London this holiday season? Maybe Sydney or Paris? Now, how'd you like to stay there for free? You can, but there's a catch. You have to let somebody stay at your house for free. It's called home swapping, and it's an increasingly popular way to vacation on the cheap. I wondered why people would be willing to invite strangers into their homes, so I first paid a visit to Gordon Shea and his wife, Carmen. They've lived on their 7-acre ranch south of Los Angeles for 10 years.
Show you our animals over here in the corrals. We have 6 geese, we have 2 goats, and 2 sheep.
And this is something that anyone who stays at your home needs to deal with?
No, nobody has to deal
with
it.
No, okay.
No, we have somebody that comes in and takes care of the animals every day, unless they want to.
The house on a hill boasts a spectacular view of the Pacific coastline from the island of Catalina to Malibu. There's a pool in back and a porch swing hanging from a tree in front. The Shea's primary residence might as well be a vacation retreat. And for numerous U.S. and European visitors, it is. The Shea's are part of a growing vacation phenomenon called home swapping. You go online, offer your home, decide where you want to go, figure out the dates, then swap.
We had an apartment on the Upper East Side of Manhattan, 4 bedrooms with a doorman and a car. We exchanged for a home in the Berkeley Hills, and the people stayed here. We've gotten offers in the last month from Paris, from London, from Rome.
Often home swappers will care for one another's pets. They'll use each other's cars. Many leave a detailed book for their guests. They'll provide information about local sites and menus from nearby restaurants. They arrange beforehand who's responsible for paying for things like plumbing emergencies. Gordon and Carmen say there are all kinds of benefits to vacationing in someone else's house.
One of the things that is very, very attractive about it is that you really get a sense of the culture and the lifestyle of a community as opposed to being a tourist.
I think one of the big upsides is financial. You save $200 to $300 a day on a hotel. You save on restaurants. You can cook at home. And one thing about being at home, the kitchen's always open.
They've only had one troubling incident in the dozens of swaps they've conducted.
We had a person who represented herself as owning a villa in Europe, and I don't think she ever owned anything, and she stayed in our guest house, and then she started annoying the neighbors so much we had to ask her to leave, and that was our only bad experience. And it was well worth all the pleasure that we've gotten out of all the other trades.
The Shays use an online service called HomeExchange.com. Last year, the site got the kind of publicity most companies only dream about. It was featured in The Holiday, a movie starring Cameron Diaz and Kate Winslet.
Home exchange. We switch houses, cars, everything. Bingo!
Ed Cushions founded the company in 1992. He says the business has changed since then.
10 years ago, it was primarily teachers and retired people. But over the last 10 years, we've seen a steady equalization of the demographics, and now it's young singles, young families.
And still retired couples, especially boomers with second homes. It costs $60 a year to join HomeExchange.com, and after that there's basically no cost except transportation to your swapped home. There is one requirement that home swappers say is a must for any participants: flexibility. both in when you want a vacation and in how you want a vacation, especially when going abroad. Jessica Jaffe is with Intervac.com, the first ever home exchange company founded in 1953.
In Europe, a lot of these homes and apartments are, you know, maybe 500 years old. So you're going to be dealing with homes that have a lot of charm, but the facilities might be a little different. So you should keep that in mind.
But the biggest hurdle and the first thing people tend to ask about is how to get over concerns about letting strangers stay in your home. Doris Sundley and her husband Jerry have been handing over the keys to their Craftsman house in Long Beach since 2001. It's 3.5 blocks from the sand.
We just last week had a couple stay here in our home from Toronto. You just have to have this kind of trust thing. And the quality of people that do this, they're just great people.
Exchange websites do provide contracts to sign saying each party is responsible for paying, say, if somebody breaks a dish. There's no money exchanged, so most home insurance companies consider home swappers just guests. Still, you should check with your insurer and then start swapping. This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. This Thanksgiving weekend, some poor souls inevitably stayed behind to work while colleagues left to visit family and friends. What I don't understand are those of you who do go on vacation, but take the office with you. Thanks in part to wireless technology, it's now a heck of a lot easier to stay in touch with work. But is it truly a vacation if you're still logging hours on the laptop? Here's Marketplace's Sam Eaton.
There's a new reality for the American vacation. Not only are people bringing work with them, many aren't even going. Expedia.com's 2007 Vacation Deprivation Survey found that, sadly, Americans have fewer vacation days than any other industrialized nation. And worse, they don't use the ones they get. The average worker leaves 3 days a year unclaimed, more than a fifth of their annual vacation time. Liz Ryan runs an online forum for working women called WorldWit. She says the reason Americans are giving up time off is simple. They're afraid of being overwhelmed when they come back. Ryan compares it to that famous I Love Lucy scene where Lucy takes a job at the candy factory and can't keep up with the conveyor belt.
When you leave a white-collar job today, the candy keeps coming down the belt. You know, when I used to do business travel in the 90s to Europe, and we would look down our noses and say, these people all disappear during the month of August. Have they no sense of competition? And hey, they were a lot smarter than we are, because when everybody goes on vacation at the same time, the candy stops coming down the belt.
But chances are there is someone in the company who can take your place at the conveyor belt while you're gone. Productivity expert and author Laura Stack says the problem is people are paranoid that their replacement will outshine them.
People think, well, gosh, if everything functioned fine without me, you know, maybe they don't need me. There's a little bit of a fear that I'm disposable.
Stack calls this paranoia a holdover from the dot-com crash when layoffs were a daily occurrence. And then there are the technological advances, those always-on, connect-from-anywhere Blackberries and laptops that tend to blur the line between work and home.
We aren't good as a whole, as Americans in general, at setting boundaries and turning off. We don't turn off the outside world.
Stack says if you don't forget what day of the week it is, that vacation really isn't a vacation. I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace Money.
Coming up, want your very own Caribbean getaway? Chris navigates the rough seas of vacation home ownership. And sometimes it's not more comfortable at the front of the plane.
Imagine doing a 10-hour flight with a bulletproof door closed. And every time you want something, it's a special procedure.
A day in the work life of an airline pilot. It's our special travel edition of Marketplace Money from American Public Media. We'll be right back. This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. I'm Tess Vigeland. Airlines seem to have pulled out of the financial crisis they've been in since 9/11. Northwest, for one, posted a profit in its first full quarter out of bankruptcy. Hawaiian Air reported a 150% jump. That doesn't mean airlines always deal out high-flying service, though. In August, close to 30% of flights were delayed. But don't lay all the blame on the cockpit. On this week's A Day in the Work Life, we reach cruising altitude with a pilot.
I love being in planes. I love being here in the hangar looking at these airplanes. And if you look at this one right here, that's a Falcon 900. It's got three engines, state-of-the-art. It's huge, and it flies anywhere around the world you want and great comfort. You're like royalty every time you walk in there. And as a pilot, you get to fly these things. How can you not love this? I'm Marc-Antoine Plourde. I'm an Air Canada pilot. My dad was an Air Canada pilot, and as long as I can remember, I wanted to follow in his footsteps. My favorite plane has got to be, you know, the P-3 Orion. I flew it in the Air Force for 4 years, and it was exciting missions from search and rescue, counter-narcotics operation, hunting for Soviet submarines, you know, make it sound like Hollywood, but that's what we were trained for. We did it all on the P-3, and for 4 years, I had such a great time. I fly the Airbus A320, a mid-range aircraft that does the entire of North America, the Caribbean, and Mexico. A pilot does, on average, 20 to 50 flights a month. And flying, as you know, is the safest method of transportation. So the odds of us ending up in an aircraft accident are so slim, we don't even think about it. There are challenges, there are dangers flying aircraft, but they do know that our license is only good for 6 months. After 6 months, we have to renew our license. So we're in the simulator, we're continuously tested for emergencies. You know, I'm never scared flying airplanes. I don't have any anxiety with regards to flying an airplane. The way 9/11 affected my career, my job, we used to fly with the cockpit doors open. We used to have such freedom to invite who we wanted in the flight deck. Now everything's so complicated, whether it be airport security, the long lineups, and the biometrics, and the finger scans, and the retina scan, and this and that. It takes forever, and it just adds so much to your day. And inside the airplane, imagine doing a 10-hour flight with a bulletproof door closed. And every time you want something, it's a special procedure. You know, it takes the fun sometimes out of the job. An airline pilot, well, at a big airline, you make over $100,000 U.S., you know, once you've been in for 10 years plus. It's a good income. I think it's well-deserved for the job that we do. It takes many, many years to get to where we're at, and we have a responsibility for the life of the passengers that are on board. You know, I take the job very seriously. Flying is a true passion. However, I do have a second passion that's been surfacing lately. I want to become a professional crooner. I'm taking lessons right now and getting a band together, and I plan to do a concert within about 12 months. So I find there's a lot of songs out there that can be sang by a pilot, such as, you know, "Fly me to the moon, let me play around the stars." So some of these songs I think I'm quite comfortable with the job I do, don't you think?
I do. A Day in the Work Life was reported by Judith Ritter.
Marketplace Money is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, working to provide tools and expertise to help you meet your retirement goals and ultimately thrive in retirement. Let's thrive. On the web at thrivent.com/retirement. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Sustainability Fund of the Tides Foundation, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet.
Time travel brings us this week's Marketplace Money buzzword, block time. Block time is the time airlines say it'll take to get from one place to another. Some travelers might be a wee bit surprised to learn the Earth is growing. Or at least that's what carriers must want you to think, because some routes are taking longer, sometimes 30 minutes longer than 10 years ago. What's the real deal? Many airlines are accounting for expected flight delays by changing their block times. Then they can tell regulators a flight that's 20 minutes late was actually on time. Hey, but at least their food is awesome.
Got a box full of letters.
I'm Tess Vigeland, and with our economics editor, Chris Farrell, we're going to attempt to answer every single one of your pressing financial questions. Right, Chris?
Every single one. I'm going to try, at least.
We have all day, right?
That's right.
All right. But before we attempt this great feat, please take down our website address. It's marketplace.org. Click on Contact, or you can call us at 877-275-6669. That's 877-ASK-MONEY, and we spell that M-O-N-Y. All right. Well, first up, we've got Satya calling from Las Cruces, New Mexico. She's a professor of public health at New Mexico State University there. Hi, Satya.
Hi.
Well, Satya, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay. I have been on the faculty here at the university for about 11 years, and I teach public health in the graduate and the undergraduate program. And I think I'm one of those people who has a job that I love very much. I love to teach, so I'm in the right place, I think.
That's very lucky for you.
I hope so.
So what's your question for Chris today?
Okay. The question I have is, in the last 2 years, my partner and I, we've been going to Curaçao and have been thinking about spending our summers in Curaçao, where I'm going to do a little bit of teaching. And our goal is to find a small home there. And I've had a lot of trouble figuring out how to finance a mortgage on a home in Curaçao. So I was really interested in hearing what Chris has to say and what are some of the pitfalls of doing that kind of financing from the United States.
All right, Chris. Well, I can smell the coconuts already.
Now, I've been to...
I feel the breeze.
Yes, I mean, I was just thinking about it, you know, boy. I've been to two of the islands in the Netherlands Antilles.
Yes.
I haven't been to Curaçao, but I've been to Bonaire and to Aruba. I don't know if I can really answer your question without doing some research.
Oh, so, there you go.
How's our budget, Tess? Okay.
Only if you take, your host with you.
Oh. That'd be wonderful.
All right. On a more serious note, there's a couple of things that you can do. In terms of finding a home in Curaçao or really anywhere in the Caribbean, because more and more people are doing it, more and more people are attracted to what you're doing. There's a standard piece of advice, and I think it really does make a lot of sense. You're going to want to find and work with local real estate agent and a local lawyer. And you're going to need both because each island has different rules or regulations. I mean, for example, in some of the British islands, you have to get a non-belongers license, which usually takes 12 to 18 months before you can buy a property. There are a number of banks, international banks, that do business in Curaçao. ING, which is one of the largest banks in the world, may be able to get a loan through there. You're not going to have a difficulty getting a loan.
Okay.
They are typically, now I'm not sure about Curaçao, in the Caribbean, it typically is about 70%.
Okay.
30% down, 70% mortgage. Here's the Chris Farrell standard approach for buying beautiful property in the Caribbean. First of all, I don't think two trips is enough. You're going to take a couple more trips.
Okay. We're going to do that. Yes.
You're going to do that just so you get to really get to know what it is you like. I mean, one thing, for example, someone who did buy in Bonaire and, they said that when they went there, they thought, well, of course you're going to want to buy on the beach.
Right.
Well, turns out what you really want to do is buy inland a little bit more. And what you really care about is the breeze. This is the kind of knowledge that you're going to want to gain.
Right.
There are a number of real estate agencies on the island. And just like with any real estate agency, you sort of try and find someone that you like and that you trust. How's that going to impact your finances? How's that going to impact your ownership? You know, run those kinds of numbers.
Oh, always, always. And I think that the idea of going a few more times to the island is helpful. It's been very wonderful to know the languages of the island.
I would love to speak the language of the island myself. Well, thank you so much for your phone call, and let us know how it goes once you get down to Curaçao if you end up moving there.
Absolutely, I will, and I'll give you guys a call from Curaçao itself.
Terrific! Thanks so much.
Uh-huh. Bye bye.
All right, how about a dip into the mailbag, Chris?
I'm ready. I'm always wondering what you're going to Hustling away.
Okay. We've got Anna from St. Paul, Minnesota, and she describes herself as one of those very rare college students who does not take any money from her parents. She pays her own rent and tuition and books and pretty much everything. And every year when she pays her taxes, the software program that she cheerfully uses informs her that she can't deduct any of those expenses. But her parents could take the deductions for her. This doesn't seem terribly fair, does it? Why is this the rule, and how long does this go on for her? Is that through the entire time she's in college?
All right, let's bring about a change.
Oh, let's do that.
She's under 24, full-time student, now living primarily on her own, which certainly seems to be the case, and covering most of her living expenses. Her parents should not be declaring her as a dependent on their income tax return. And by the way, they should not be taking any of the education credits like the HOPE or the Lifetime Learning Credit. And that way, what Anna can do is take advantage of one of these credits for higher education, deduction for higher education, which would be a real benefit to her.
Hope that helps you out, Anna, and good luck with your taxes. Need to know how to organize your money or your taxes? Well, give us a call. We'll show you how to do it. Click on the contact button on our website, marketplace.org, or give us a call at 877-275-6669. That's 1-877-ASK-MONY. All right, let's hit the phones. We've got Steve calling from San Francisco, California. Hey, Steve.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Tell us a little bit about yourself. What do you do there in the beautiful city of San Francisco?
It is beautiful. Thank you. I am an attorney and a writer, and I have a small press.
Oh.
I have done pretty well here. I saved some money in my 401k during the dot-com boom, and my question has to do with what we call socially responsible investing.
Very popular topic for our listeners, Chris, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I hope so. After a few people at work told me it was impossible, I learned that my employer's 401k plan does allow us to choose the mutual funds that are not on the list that comes by default, because the package deal included stock in Altria Group, which I guess is supposed to sound altruistic, but it's actually Philip Morris Reborn. I don't want to make money off exporting munitions or poisoning rivers or advertising cigarettes to 12-year-olds. I do want to support companies that treat their employees well and companies that promote things that I believe in, like wind power and hybrid automotive energy.
But you say you have a mutual fund that says it does invest in socially responsible companies, right?
I found a couple that said they did. But when I read the prospectus and I read the fine print and I see the companies that they have money invested in, it's not that easy to find out what companies they have, actually. The only ones they actually tell us are the top 10. You know, I do believe in capitalism as a concept, but then I see a lot of companies there I don't want to be profiting from and I don't want to be supporting. Is there a resource out there to help people with this kind of thing?
That's interesting, Chris, that that his mutual fund only lists the top 10 companies that they're investing in. Is there a way to kind of dig deeper in the dirt within your mutual fund?
There are several things that you can do. First of all, socialinvest.org is sort of the main portal into the socially responsible investing world.
Okay.
And they have a lot of information on the mutual funds themselves, but also in terms of community investing and some avenues for community investing, because more and more people are putting some of their checking account money or savings account money into small community banks that lend to inner city entrepreneurs and inner city homeowners. The other thing that I'm a big advocate of, and I guess you're aware of this, is I like index funds. And there are a couple of socially responsible index funds. Probably the best known is the Domini Index. It's 400 companies, very low fees, does very, very well relative to the S&P 500, which is what we would normally compare it to. But again, what you've really hit on is a big issue in socially responsible investing. How deep do you want to drill down? If you go to Morningstar.com or the socialinvest.org, and you do the information there, you're typically going to get the top 10 holdings. And the reason why they don't publish as much is they can change. There's a lot of turnover. And frankly, I think that the information should be more available in today's internet world, but it takes a little more digging.
All right, Steve, you ready to dig?
Yes.
All right.
But I do want to say that people should not despair. I mean, you can't achieve perfection, but you can get pretty close to what you think is the way you'd like your money to work. There are all kinds of trade-offs. Perhaps, you know, you would prefer have a different type of labor relations, but what it turns out is, you know, they're not going to have the labor relations you want, but they really treat women well. But I think one of the things that people should not take away is that socially responsible investing is a fool's errand. Mm-hmm. It is not a fool's errand. We always bring values to whenever we spend our money.
Right.
And this is no different.
All right. Does that help you out, Steve?
It certainly does. And I appreciate your being on this issue.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Whatever you have a question about, we've got the answer. Give us a call, 877-275-6669. That's 877-ASK-MONY. Or hop on over to our website. It's marketplace.org and click on the contact button. This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. All right, one more reach into the email bag, Chris. We've got Mike writing in from Council Bluffs, Iowa, and he's a professional truck driver, but his real dream involves food. He's got a knack for cooking, so much so that he received his professional chef certification, and he's got a dream of opening up a little bed and breakfast inn, but as we know, that is quite the expensive dream. So lately he's been looking into this notion of government grants to start a small business, but he gets sent to all these websites that claim to have info on these grants for a fee. Is this notion of a small business grant from the government a myth? Does he have to pay this kind of fee?
Okay. You can go to the Small Business Administration website, sba.gov. It's a pretty decent website, a lot of information there. And they do have a page that lists all the different grants, typically by various federal agencies. Take a look at it. If you are thinking about starting your business, some of them may be in an area, you know, transportation, infrastructure. There may be some reason why there would be a grant available to you. But as you can imagine, it's pretty tough to get. I'm not saying don't take a look at it, but I wouldn't have high hopes that your entrepreneurial dream and a government grant are going to match up. But I have a suggestion that may be more useful. Go to a website, score.org, score.org. It's a nonprofit. It works with the Small Business Administration, and it's retired executives, and they help small business people start their business.
Hmm.
A lot of what I think in terms of starting a business is you want to talk a lot. You want to have a lot of conversation. Yes, you're going to need money, but you also need knowledge. If you're on the road and there's a bed and breakfast, maybe walk over there. Say, hey, you know, I'm a professional truck driver, but I got my chef's license and I got this dream and here's what I'm thinking. What do you think? You know, you're going to get a lot of information that way. I'd spend my time in that area rather than trying to hunt down a grant.
All right. Well, we hope that helps you out. Mike, that's all the questions we can take on this week's show, but please leave your question for a future program on our voicemail. It's 877-275-6669, 877-ASK-MONY, or visit the contact page on our website, marketplace.org. Thanks so much, Chris.
Thanks, Tess.
Since when does a cross-country flight require 6 layovers? When you're gunning for a free ticket, enter the bizarro world of mileage runners. And here's a conversation you do not want to have on vacation.
Is this the emergency room?
Yeah, yeah.
You speak English?
Yes, I speak English.
I ran into a metal pole, chest first.
Our own Rico Galliano gets educated about healthcare while you travel. That's ahead on Marketplace Money from American Public Media.
Welcome back to a special travel edition of Marketplace Money from American Public Media. I'm Tess Vegland. Heading overseas for the holidays? Pack your passport, wear a money belt, and double-check your health benefits. Many plans don't cover health care abroad. Those that do can charge hefty out-of-network rates, especially for non-emergencies. In this encore edition of Educating Rico, our hero learns about travel health the hard way.
Hi, I'm Rico, and here's a story.
All right, this is called Bewitched.
I was on vacation in London, England, and wow, my favorite British band, The Wedding Present, happened to be playing. They're great. Only problem, the show lets out just minutes before the last train is supposed to depart from Shepherd's Bush Tube Station. My friend Myra and I run for the platform. We can hear the train coming. I'm racing up the stairs, but where's Myra? Still running, I turn my head. There she is, behind me. I turn back around, and where did that huge metal pole come from?
Ow. Ow, 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 ow.
Full speed, right in the chest.
Mind the gap.
2 days later, I've flown to rainy Amsterdam, and my chest feels worse. I've spent the last few nights trying to decide which side of my body it hurts least to sleep on. Breathing isn't so fun either. It's time to get help. On foot.
Luckily, there's a sign right outside the apartment where I'm staying, pointing to the hospital. Luckily, because it's raining like crazy. Hi.
Hi.
Is this the same as the emergency room?
Yes. Yeah.
It is? You speak English?
Yes, I speak English.
Do you know how much this will cost me?
It depends.
I ran into a metal pole.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm afraid maybe a cracked rib or a bruised rib.
We can give you medicine, and we'll make a picture maybe if it's...
An x-ray. Do you know how expensive that would be? I don't know if my insurance covers it.
It's almost 200 euros just to see a doctor, and then the x-ray...
200 euros! That's about 290 bucks just to have a doctor step in the same room with me. So I decide to tough it out like a man. A big, dumb, poor man. Now, turns out my injury was painful but minor. 2 months of shallow breathing and extreme discomfort later, I was more or less healed. But what if it had been worse? And I was in a country I'm familiar with, where everyone speaks English. What if I'd been, say, almost anywhere else? So, for a guide to healthcare on the road, I've called upon David Goldberg, MD. He runs the website mdtravelhealth.com. Hello, doctor.
Hi, Rico.
How are you?
Fine, thanks.
Good. I'm well now. But,
right.
But it does lead me to ask. So, I guess the first question is, when I'm traveling, is it worth it to get travel health insurance?
It's really essential to get travel health insurance. First of all, to cover any expenses abroad, but even more importantly, if you become seriously ill, it costs a fortune, literally tens of thousands of dollars, if you need to be evacuated out of the country that you're visiting. So travel health insurance is a necessity even for short trips.
Even for short trips. So, I mean, it's how much does a general policy cost me?
These policies don't cost that much, $100, maybe $200 for a longer trip. And even for older people who have chronic medical problems, they really don't cost that much.
Now, are these things country-specific so that they sort of hook in nicely with the health system of the country you're visiting, or do you just get a general policy no matter where you're going?
All the ones I've seen have been general policies.
So, and generally, I want them to cover... what?
You want them to cover really everything, the cost of any hospitalizations or doctor bills when you're there. And most importantly, you want them to cover medical evacuation in case you need to be flown out of the country you're visiting, either back to the United States or Western Europe or some other place with state-of-the-art medical care.
Okay. Now, whether or not I have insurance, let's say I'm injured. It's perhaps not evacuation worthy, but it's not good. How do I actually get treated? What's the first thing that I should do?
The first thing I would do is, if you have internet access, I'd probably go to the U.S. Embassy website for the country you're staying in, or just call the embassy. Most of the U.S. Embassy websites nowadays have a full listing of doctors and hospitals and other medical facilities in that country. The embassy always qualifies it. They always say, we don't guarantee the quality of the services, but this is obviously a good place to start. If you're staying in a hotel or some other residence, you can ask the people there. And there are various other websites that have information. My website, mdtravelhealth.com. For most countries, lists a number of places you can go to.
Now, what if I don't have internet or phone access. I'm, you know, either I'm camping or I...
In the industrialized countries, university hospitals usually are the best in the area. For developing nations, usually you want to avoid the large public hospitals. Most of those countries have smaller private clinics that offer Western-style medical care, and those are the ones you want to look for.
Okay. Now, not everything requires hospitalization, and a good way to save money is to take care of yourself. So what should I pack first aid-wise, keeping in mind I prefer to travel light because I hate baggage claim?
Well, the two biggest risks for any traveler are trauma and infection. So you want to bring along, first of all, a good broad-spectrum antibiotic or more than one antibiotic. If you're going to a developing nation, you want to bring along an antidiarrheal drug such as Imodium, bandages, and gauze rolls. Depending upon the sort of trip, you would think about bringing along sleeping pills, pills for motion sickness, pills for jet lag, and definitely some pain medications in case you bruise yourself.
As Slim Pickens said in Dr. Strangelove, man, a fella could have a pretty good weekend in Vegas with all that stuff.
That's right.
Thank you very much for coming on the show, Doctor.
Thank you.
And here's another money-saving traveler's tip from yours truly. When you're running for a train, look where you're going. I'm Rico Galliano for Marketplace Money.
Marketplace Money is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, working to provide tools and expertise to help you meet your retirement goals and ultimately thrive in retirement. Let's thrive on the web at thrivent.com/retirement. And by Reuters, delivering news and information that reaches over a billion people every day. Before it's news, it's Reuters.
I flew cross-country from Los Angeles to Boston for the holiday this week. I took something of a circuitous route because of work, L.A. to Seattle to Minneapolis to Washington to Boston. If I'd done it all through one airline, I could call myself a mileage runner. For these folks, the longer the flight, the more layovers, the better. Dave DeMergen is a writer with Wired magazine, and he recently wrote about his own 6,000-mile, six-flight nightmare. I mean, mileage run. Dave, any plans to do it again?
That would be a big no. And when I started, I've loved airlines since I was a little kid, and I was really excited to go on these mileage runs. But there's just something to be said for sitting in an airplane seat in coach for 27 hours and, you know, eating United Airlines snack packs for an entire day. It sucks.
Well, tell us a little bit about your experience and what you did for Wired magazine.
Well, you know, I do a lot of writing about commercial aviation and airlines and was telling my editor about these mileage runners, and he was fascinated by it and gave it some thought and decided he was going to give me $500 and ask me to learn how to do mileage runs of my own and then to write about it.
What did $500 get you?
$500 got me two runs. One of them was Boston to Las Vegas round trip, where I stopped in Washington, D.C., San Diego, San Francisco, Chicago for $275. And the second one was an easier run. I went Boston, Washington, Washington, Philly, Philly, Detroit, Detroit, Philly, Philly, New York, New York, Boston.
And that was considered one ticket?
That was one ticket. That was one ticket. That one was $196 round trip.
And that's in one day?
That one I did in one day, yes.
Oh, my goodness. Well, how many stops did you have on that second one?
Four on the second one, five on the first one.
So how do you even book that?
What you need to learn is that every fare has a series of rules attached to it, and it takes a long time to find the rules on these different websites. But one of the things that rule dictates is how many stops you can make. And while most people will make, as you said, one connection or two, a lot of times the rules say that you can make up to six or sometimes even more connections on a single ticket without changing the fare. So once you've learned how to interpret those rules and kind of understand where the different airlines fly, you can put together a run that has six or seven stops without breaking the fare.
All right. So how many miles did you rack up?
Well, the first trip, which was the Las Vegas trip, if I had done the nonstop, that would have come in at just over 4,000 miles. I was able to get close to 7,000 miles with the extra connection. So I almost doubled my miles on that one. The second one, I wasn't really aiming for miles as much as I was for segments. So I kept the flights short up and down the East Coast and racked up, I think, eight segments on that trip.
Now, why were you going for segments?
With all of the airline frequent flyer programs, you will reach elite status either by flying a certain number of miles in a year or for a certain number of segments in a year. And one of the mileage runners that I spoke to research the story suggested that since I live on the East Coast and there's a lot of cities close to each other, I should be going for segments instead of miles.
Is there anything that would make it worth it? When we first started discussing your story in our editorial meeting, the question that came up around the table was, what would make it worth it for you to do it? And one of my colleagues said, you know, would you do this? And I said, absolutely not. He said, well, what if you could fly all day and that would get you a free ticket? And I thought, you know, I might be willing to take one day off and fly around the country in order to get, you know, a free ticket somewhere. Is there some point at which it would be worth it to you?
I mean, I think the thing that killed me was sitting in coach. One of the runners that I talked to research this story did a run to Singapore via Hong Kong and Los Angeles. He was basically in a plane for 38 hours, but he spent the entire time in Singapore Airlines first class, which is pretty much the nicest way you can fly. And he basically got plied with free alcohol, gourmet food, and, you know, magazines the entire way, and said that it was just kind of like a two-day vacation. So if I was being waited on in a fully reclinable sleeper seat, I might think about it.
But otherwise, no way.
I don't think so.
All right. Well, is there any sort of, I don't know, milder form of this that kind of a normal traveler could practice? If we wanted to get a little more out of a regular trip, what kinds of things could we do?
Well, one thing that a lot of business travelers will do who don't consider themselves mileage runners but who want to rack up some extra miles is they'll just tack an extra connection onto their trip. So if they're going from, you know, New York to Chicago, they might add a connection in D.C. if they can pull it off, and that will get them an extra couple thousand miles. And if they do that a few times over the course of a year, they've done pretty well.
Dave Demergen is a writer for Wired Magazine. Thanks for going through this for all of us.
Thank you.
This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media.
White House officials say the president
and the experts say usually
the Heritage Foundation estimates
like it's going to be the best
they
quarter.
They decide what they're going to
charge. That has some veterans nervous.
It's time once again for our economics editor Chris Farrell to help you sort out what's smart, what's stupid, and what's the straight story. And since it's Thanksgiving or just passed, Chris thought he would share some things that he's grateful for, going beyond family, friends, and colleagues, of course.
Tess, let's see. This year, I'm going to do a repeat. Top on my list last year was Ben Bernanke, 14th chairman of the Federal Reserve. And once again, I'm grateful that Mr. Bernanke is at the helm. I think he's been masterful handling this credit crunch, credit squeeze, subprime mortgage mess. And at the same time, he's not bailing out Wall Street. Just ask Mr. O'Neill, Mr. Prince, and Mr. Spector, all of whom headed big firms and are looking for work.
But certainly you can't say that we're out of the woods at this point. The housing crisis is still underway and the credit crunch is not gone. Couldn't he have done more?
No, I don't think he could have done more, because if he'd done more, it would have turned into a Wall Street bailout.
Uh-huh.
I'm not saying he doesn't face challenges, that this isn't a bad situation. What worries me, for example, is the decline in the value of the dollar. When the Fed cuts its rates next time,
right?
You know, what impact will that have on the dollar? How high will the euro go? And you're absolutely right. Subprime mess is not over with. But I do think so far he's done a good job of walking that tightrope between making sure that the whole financial system doesn't seize up and not bailing out Wall Street. Because you know what? There's a lot of people on Wall Street that deserve to suffer. They deserve to get their comeuppance. And I hope that they do.
Oh, my. Well, no gratitude there, I suppose. But what else are you thankful for this year?
I am thankful, this might surprise you a little bit, about the national debate we're having on health insurance. The candidates for the White House are being forced to confront, what are you going to do about a system that has 47 million uninsured and a system where people who have insurance are unhappy with their coverage and they're nervous. They're at risk. The middle class today is at risk. This is a national crisis. It's a good thing that we're having this discussion.
But discussion doesn't get you very far if there's no action. And frankly, and we've discussed this before,
yeah,
I feel like I've been hearing this for the last 5, 6, 7 presidential campaigns, and nothing ever happens.
You're right. And I think you're absolutely right. Cautious skepticism is the right attitude. Plus, what is it? 1/7 of our economy? It's pretty hard to change.
Yeah.
And I, you know, if I hear one more time, one of these candidates say, we can't have the nationalization of our healthcare system. No one is proposing nationalization.
Or socialization.
Or socialization, or whatever term you want to use. I mean, basically what's being proposed is a variation of what Mitt Romney did in Massachusetts or what Arnold Schwarzenegger is trying to do in California. I mean, that's kind of the baseline that people are trying to do. So I think you're right. Cautious skepticism matters. Here's where I think the difference, there are two differences that I would emphasize. When the 1993 Clinton healthcare plan just vaporized, we went through a period of time where healthcare inflation dropped to extremely low levels.
Yep.
And so I think for people who had healthcare coverage, a lot of the pressure abated. I see no sign right now of healthcare inflation abating. I can make a stronger case for getting worse. And the other factor is we live in an increasingly global economy. Our economy is more globalized today than it was back in 1993. More and more people are at risk of losing their job to technology, to global competition, and therefore their families are at risk of losing their jobs. That pressure is going to grow.
All right. Well, I suppose we'll see in the next couple of years whether there's anything to be thankful for there, truly. Have we finished with your Thanksgiving plate?
I have one more. The pension bill, the new pension bill that was recently passed,
yep.
It should encourage more workers to sign up for their 401k, 403b plans. And I think that's good news. And this is something that we can congratulate Congress on because we do beat up on them a lot.
Gotta agree with you there. That is certainly something we can all be thankful for. The Straight Story with our man Chris Farrell, for whom we are most thankful.
Thanks a lot, Tess.
All this travel talk giving you the itch to roam? Get thee to a travel agent and book a flight. Or I guess these days it's more likely you'll use the internet to get a seat. I mean that literally. You can often pick your exact seat on the plane, but which to choose? We spoke with Matt Daimler, the founder and CEO of SeatGuru.com. It's one of several sites that provide the pros and cons of every seat on just about any jet. Matt says, first, know what makes you comfortable.
You know, one of the funny things about running this website is that someone else would say about that back of the plane next to the bathrooms, they'd say, it's great. I know exactly when the line is small. That's when I'm able to get right out of my seat and get right in line.
But for him, it's all about the legroom.
It's literally the difference between being able to, you know, open your laptop screen only 3/4 of the way versus having it at a comfortable viewing angle. That 1 to 2 inches also means maybe I can cross my legs a little bit better under the seat in front of me, and I'll look for the carriers that have, you know, 33, 34 inches of legroom and things like that.
But how to snag that real estate? Booking early helps, but Matt says you'll have another shot at good seats if you check in online 24 hours before the flight. If that fails, there's always the last minute when frequent flyers upgrade out of economy into first class.
Often they're leaving behind good seats, and that's another time in which you can get a better seat or be upgraded to, you know, something a little more comfortable.
Then sit back and relax, assuming you don't get stuck with a seat that doesn't recline. And that's Marketplace Money for this week. Next time, believe it or not, plenty of housing markets are still doing fine, but not everyone's celebrating.
Everything's increased. So if my house is worth more, but I can't afford to buy a new house, then what difference does it make?
Marketplace Money is produced by John Haas with Rico Galliano, James Richter, Stephen Hoffman, and the rest of the Marketplace staff. Our theme was composed by Mark Governor. The executive producer of the program is J.J. Yore. Remember, talk to your own expert before you make any big money decisions. I'm Tess Vigeland. Safe travels, and we'll see you next week.
Want to hear something on Marketplace Money again? Help is as near as your home computer. To find audio archives of past programs and information on transcripts, just go to the internet and log on to our website. The information you need when you need it is only a few clicks away. Just point your browser to marketplace.org. Marketplace Money is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, working to provide tools and expertise to help you meet your retirement goals and ultimately thrive in retirement. Let's thrive. On the web at thrivent.com/retirement.
American Public Media.